We're beginning a special class in honor of Shavuot on Akdamot. Akdamot is an Ashkenazi piyut. It is an Ashkenazi ballad song that Ashkenazim sing on Shavuot morning before reading the Ten Commandments, before reading from the Torah. Some have the custom to say it when the Torah is on the bima before the blessing. Others have the custom afterwards. We generally say it before the blessing of the person who goes up to the Torah. And it is an introduction. And in a few moments, we will actually learn it, as you guys asked, what it means. It's all in Aramaic. But before we do that, we are going to recount a story, a famous story, about the history of Akdamot. Now, we have to discern, when we speak about stories, between stories written in Tanakh, that are holy of holies, stories written in Mishnah and Talmud, that we say they're all true, but we don't know if they're all to be taken literally, as we discussed in our other classes. Stories written in Medrash, where again, you have to know which Midrashim are bona fide, and what the Medrash meant by the story it said. And then stories that are told over from person to person, where they have a certain weight, they teach a certain lesson, but you have to be wary, as the Talmud says, ask yourself, who told me the story? So the person who told me the story was my first grade Rebbe, which makes it a story that you tell children, a story that gets passed down, but it's not exactly recorded in one of these wonderful works that you could say this is part of the Jewish tradition and this is so. People sometimes take stories like this and they make them a part of their basics of Jewish faith, and that's not correct. These are stories which are interesting, which are nice, and they probably are true to a certain degree, but they've been passed down in a very informal way and you don't have to believe them. They might be true and they might not be true. There are things that we say, this is tradition, so you should know this is our tradition, this is the way it is. If this is what my father told me, that his father told him, that his father told him, so it carries a weight in the sense of it's being true. But a story that's passed down more like folklore, so then we say it's an important story, tell your kids the story, but don't give it the gravity of Tanakh or the words of our sages. And the same goes for the stories of the golem. There are wonderful stories about this creature that the great rabbi of Prague, the Maharal, who was a contemporary of Rav Moshe Isserles, the Ramav, the Shulchan Aruch, and he was really chief rabbi of Prague. So there are wonderful stories about what happened 500 years ago when the Maharal created a golem, but who said he ever did? Who said these stories are true? I have no idea. And you're a perfectly kosher Jew if you doubt them. You could say they're true, you could say they're not true, you could say maybe they're true, and that's all valid. This isn't something that we have on tradition that's ironclad, that this is a part of Judaism. It's nice to know, it's nice to tell over, and that's about the weight it has. So here's the story. I was in first grade, and I had a wonderful Hasidish Rebbe who told us the following story, which Hasidim all tell their kids, and for some reason it remained in the very powerful in the Hasidic world, even though the story goes back almost 1,000 years ago. The story goes back 900 and something years ago to the days of Rabbi Meir, the famous poet Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir was a chazan, and Rabbi Meir is quoted by Rashi. So Rabbi Meir ben Yitzchak of the city of Worms, Germany, Rabbi Meir compiled the Akdamos, but our story doesn't begin here. Our story begins in a town or a city where there was a governor or a king who was responsible for many areas, amongst them the Jews, and amongst them also a church. And in that church there was a priest who knew all kinds of black magic, and the king was very scared of him. And he would always egg on the king that he should make decrees against the Jews. And one time he said, you know, you're supposed to be faithful to Christianity, and if you really were faithful, then you would force the Jews into debate with me, and tell them that they either have to convert or leave or die, but you can't leave things hanging like this. You're always trying to be nice to them, and you have to corner them. And the king was scared. He wasn't sure what to do. And finally he told the Jews, okay, you guys have to come up with somebody. He's going to debate you. And the Jews, as is our tradition, they always tried to stay away from debates, and certainly this one where they didn't think the debate would be so much about religion. It would be more about his ability to try and make us fall. So the Jews said, we really don't want to debate him. And the king says, I don't see a way out. You guys have to present someone. So he gave them a date. He gave them months to prepare. And the Jews weren't sure what they were supposed to do. So they gathered in their shuls and they prayed and they declared a fast. And they said, we're going to ask Hashem what we're supposed to do and hope that Hashem gives us an answer. And the rabbi has a dream that they're supposed to send to the Jews the lost 10 tribes on the other side of Sambatyon. They're supposed to send word to them that they should send a representative because he's the only one, people who have learned Torah like them in purity, separate from the nations, they could handle someone as powerful as this priest. So they weren't sure who to send. So again, they asked and they fasted, and then the rabbi and all the elders had a dream, and the next morning they convened and they all said, we had a dream. And they said, Rabbi Meir, our chazan, he's the one that's supposed to go to Jerusalem, travel there to the yeshiva of the Kabbalists and ask them for a map, and then they're supposed to guide him how to find the lost 10 tribes and bring back someone from the lost 10 tribes to represent us. So Rabbi Meir, if this is what everyone told him he's supposed to do, he accepted it upon himself. Everyone blessed him. They gave him the means to go with, and they gave him two people to go with him to go to Jerusalem to the yeshiva and get directions, and then go and quickly bring someone back from the yeshiva, from the lost 10 tribes. So Rabbi Meir traveled with these two people. Now these two people are supposed to bring back the person from the other side of Sambatyon. And he goes to the yeshiva of the Kabbalists and he asks them, what are we supposed to do? Can you guys help us? And they say, no, none of us can help you. None of us feel like we know enough, but you have to go to the other side of Sambatyon. We're going to send you. Now, the Talmud tells us there's this river called Sambatyon. Sambatyon comes from the word Shabbat. In Greek, many Hebrew words have the three letters yon added to them, and then they have this Greek connotation. So there's this river called Shabbatyon, which became Sambatyon, which is a river that the Talmud says 6 days a week there's lava and rocks flowing down and rocks shooting up from this river. And on Shabbat it comes to a rest, and you have a lot of water and rocks shooting up from the water. You have a whole area of water flowing, but there are so many rocks shooting up and crashing down, you can't possibly cross it. And on Shabbat it rests. And when Sancheiriv took the 10 tribes, he took them somewhere into Africa, across this river, to an area that you can't get out other than by crossing this river. Maybe there are jagged cliffs on each side, but there's this large area which cannot be escaped. Maybe it's an island, a huge island that's surrounded by this river. There's no way out without crossing this river, and the only way to cross the river is to cross on Shabbat. So he forced them to cross to the other side, and they could never leave, because all week long there are rocks shooting out, and on Shabbat, well, you're not allowed to swim on Shabbat unless someone's life depends on it. So they've made do, and they created their life on that side of Sambatyon. So the Kabbalists tell him, none of us can really help you, we don't feel qualified, but we will draw you a map, and you should go to the other side of Sambatyon and bring someone from there, and they will be able to help you. So Rabbi Meir gets the map from them, and he starts traveling with his two men. And they travel from Israel into northern Africa, and every time as they're traveling, they enter a jungle, and there are wild animals, and the people with them are all scared, and he always tells them, we're going to do a mitzvah, nothing bad will happen, you guys don't have to worry. And this goes time and again, where they encounter dangers, and again, when they tell the story to a first grader, so you hear about the lion and the tiger and the bear, oh my. You hear the story with all its excitement. You hear the story with all its excitement. We'll talk. I don't remember it. I have to check it. You hear the story with all its excitement, and for a first grader, it's a really exciting story in all 10 parts. I'm telling it all to you, one part. But when you tell your children, and it's a good idea to tell your children, so then you could add all the exciting parts to the story. And finally, after weeks of traveling, they reach a place where they hear large noises, banging, and the people with them tell them, this sounds like a dangerous area, who knows what tribes we're approaching, listen to that noise. He says, no, we're approaching the river Sambatyo, and that's what you're hearing. And they keep going closer to the noise, and it gets scarier and scarier. And finally, they approach a clearing, and in front of them, they see exactly what they heard. There's this huge river, and there's rocks shooting out of it. And the people with him tell him, what are we going to do? He says, we're going to stay far away until Shabbat comes. They've been keeping a log, a record of each day of the week. So they wait there until Shabbat comes Friday afternoon. And all the time they've been sitting there, these two men see Rabbi Meir learning every minute and writing and writing and writing and writing and writing. And as Shabbat settles, as the sun is setting, the rocks start settling and they stop flying out. And he turns to the two people with him and he says, look, I'm going to swim across Sambatyo now and I'm going to ask them to send someone back on Shabbat. I'm not allowed to swim back. They don't need me. There's no pikuach nefesh. I am needed to swim across one way. I'm getting a one-way ticket into Sambatyo because you need whoever I'm going to fetch out of there to swim back. He's allowed to swim on Shabbat. I'm not allowed to swim back, which means I'm never coming back. So during this time, I've written up two things. I've written up a divorce contract for my wife, because now that I realize I'm swimming across this river and I'm never coming back, she should be free to marry someone else. And I've also written up a song. And the song should be brought back to our community. It's a song about the greatness of Torah. Our community has had this challenging time where they know the sword is hanging over their head. And I wrote the song about the amazing beauty and wholeness of Torah. And it's a song to sing on Shavuos morning in honor of the Torah, receiving the Torah. And that's the Akdamos that we receive. So Rabbi Meir leaves them with the get for his wife and the song of Akdamos that we are going to learn later tonight. And then he swims across the river. And as he gets up the riverbank, two policemen run up to him. And they say, it's Shabbos, what are you doing swimming on Shabbos? So he says, it's pikuach nefesh. They say, what pikuach nefesh? It's Shabbos, you're going to jail. And they start taking him to jail. As they're bringing him to jail, he says, you don't understand. I've been sent here by the Jewish community. I need to meet your king. We need a representative from you. There's a tremendous danger for my community, and that's why I've come. So they start interviewing him, and they hear his story, and they take him to the king. So the Jews on the other side of Sambatyon are 10 tribes, and they live according to Torah. They have policemen who enforce the Torah, and they have a king. So he comes to the king, and he tells him the story. So the king puts together a council, and the wise men decide that they have to help this community. They're going to send back a man named Rav Dan. And they summon Rav Dan, and they explain to him what's going on. And that he has to go and he's never coming back. It's pikuach nefesh. He's going to go and see the big world. He's going to go see all the Jews on the other side of Sambatyon. But he's never going to be able to come back. And so Rav Dan, he swims back across to the two messengers who are waiting for him. And they take him back to their city, back to Germany, to Worms, if that's the city where the story took place. They take him back to their city. And then we come up to the story of the great debate. Of course, when you're telling first graders, you tell them how the due date is coming and they're not sure they're going to make it on time and they're rushing and finally the due date comes and the king tells the rabbi, where's your man? And the rabbi says, give us a little bit more time. And they say, no, we have this great coliseum. They gather in all the people of the town, the Jews and the non-Jews, and everyone's at the stadium. And the priest starts telling them, guys, now's the time. Either we're on or we're not on. Either you lost or you put up your man. And just as he's saying this, They walk into town, right? You know how to tell a story to first graders. They walk into town in the nick of time. So they walk in. And now, we'll see if I can remember the rest of the story. This is where the story actually gets exciting. This is the part I don't remember. I'm going to tell you the story inaccurately. I apologize, I don't remember all the details. There was an olive press there. And a big, heavy pole that they used to press the olives. And so, the man goes to the olive press and he takes this big, heavy pole. And he says whatever incantations he says. And then he lifts it on a finger. And then he says, now we're going to see if you could handle this. And he flings this huge heavy beam straight at Rav Dan. And Rav Dan, who's obviously learned in all these things, catches it and says, okay, I showed you I could do what you just said, but now my turn. And he throws it up into the air and it remains hanging and it doesn't fall. Says, okay, now what? So he goes over to, they have these two huge rocks that they use to grind the olives. And he says his incantations and the rocks start moving. So he says, now it's all yours. So Rav Dan walks over to them. And he stops them. And then he tosses them in the air. And in the air, they start moving. And they're standing there hanging. So you have a pole. And you have the rocks grinding. This is the story I heard as a first grader. I told you. I gave a big introduction here, okay? This isn't written in Tanakh. This isn't written in Talmud. This isn't written in Medrash. And the last part of the story, I don't remember exactly the details. Something to the effect that he tried to jump Rav Dan with a sword or something, and he kicked him up, and then the pole knocked him, flew straight at him and knocked him into the stones that were churning, and that's where he met his fateful end as he was churned up in the stones, and then they both came down, and with that, the Jewish people of the city were saved by Rav Dan. So this is the amazing story of Akdamos that we heard as first graders, that, like I said, call it folklore, call it whatever you want to call it, but the Akdamos we have, and Rabbi Meir was for sure a learned person, and the rest of the story is a good story, especially to tell in the middle of the night. It has a nice happy ending for the children. Like I said, it's not Tanakh, it's not Medrash. There are many variations to the story. This is what my first grade Rebbe told me, more or less, as far as I remember, now that 3 decades or more have passed. But you guys are welcome to go visit a Hasidic school. I went back to him when I started teaching about 20 years ago. And I said to him, can you give it to me in writing? I said to him, you're the only one who told me the story. What's the source? So he said to me, we all know it. I said, what's the source? He said, all the kids know it. Everyone knows it. It's a story everyone tells over before Shavuos. So I said, yeah, you're the only one who told me. And everyone I asked doesn't know the story. He said, in Hasidic schools, everyone knows it. I said, could you give it to me in writing? He said, no. He didn't know. He said, there might be a book written in Yiddish that tells the story, but I don't read Yiddish too well. So I've since then found different sources that say a much shorter, less exciting version of the story. But you guys didn't go to Hasidic Rebbe for first grade, so at least you should fill in your education. There's something, you should know the story exists. That's our quick introduction to